honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, where we try to fit a World War II veteran story into 1 hour on the radio, but that isn't always possible, and I've realized that this is going to have to be one of those rare occasions where we really need multiple episodes to tell the story. So plan on hearing more of Jim Parker's memories, especially the full story of his most harrowing World War II bomber mission on our next episode, but we're going to squeeze as much in as we can today, and I want to say a big thank you to Belinda Morse of Honor Flight Southern Nevada for connecting me to Jim, a decorated B-17 pilot with the 301st Bomb Group in World War II, who went on to a long career in aviation and even has fond memories of shuttling Frank Sinatra around in a Learjet. The next plane Jim is going to climb into is a Stearman biplane in September when the Dream Flights organization stops through Las Vegas on its barnstorming tour, treating World War II vets to aerial adventures. Jim's first cockpit experience came in Orion PT-22 in Hemet, California. How confident were you, Jim, that you knew what you were doing?
Call it dreamer, because that's what it is. Strong dream that you can force it into reality. I've always had an open door to God. He's always talked to me anytime I want to talk to him. I don't know about you, but he talks to me in my language so that he's sure that I understand what he's telling me. When I told him I was going to pursue Marion Joyce, he gave me an A+. So I knew I was on the right track, but we had this perfect life. It couldn't have been any better. She didn't want to be Miss Big somebody or Miss Little somebody. She wanted to be Joyce Parker.
And is flying something that you did take to pretty quickly? Did you get the feel and the hang of it pretty quickly?
This little British guy had been in the RAF and fighters over there in England before I guess he had a breakdown, so they let him out, and he came to Canada, and then he got in the U.S., and this is Ryan's School of Aeronautics out there at Hemet at that time, and he was working for Ryan. He was real good with aero work. Man, I could do the niftiest snap rolls, vertical reverses, and all of those things. In fact, the Army checkpoint says, I've never seen a primary student that had the detail that you have of all these maneuvers. He was a little guy, and I was big. They broke us up because they put me up for elimination. I flunked a civilian ride, and I go get this Army check pilot, and he's about 5'4", and probably 140 pounds soaking wet, and he was always jumping up trying to put his arm around my shoulder. We go out for the check ride. He starts the engine. He taxis the airplane out. He runs it up. He does the takeoff. He does the flying. He does the landing. So I knew I'd washed out. I hadn't even touched the airplane. I jump out and get my parachute and head for the barn, and he says, three-striper. He says, don't you know how to report to the officer when you're leaving? Yes, sir. So we walk in arm in arm. And I figure it's over. So we'll go in the next morning. Nobody's saying anything. The manager says, okay, you have a new instructor today. And here's this big bruiser like me. And the damn airplane couldn't get us in the air. Once we got in the air, we didn't dare do rolls or maneuvers because it stalled out on us. I went into the civilian that ran the school for Ryan. I said, this guy can't be my instructor. I weighed 205. He weighed probably 210 or 215. You can look at it. It wasn't.
PT-22.
It was comfortable for a 150-pounder. My head stuck out so far that I got all the slipstream. But I graduated anyway.
What I try to do is put myself in your shoes, right? And so I'm thinking about it. Here you are. You've talked about the life you grew up with on the farm, never even seen an airplane, no electricity in the home. You end up as a pilot, and by the time you're 20 years old, you have your wings, you have a wife, and as they tell you you're going overseas, she tells you she's pregnant. So you're leaving, you're going overseas, and you've got a pregnant wife that you're leaving behind. Did that weigh on you, concern you at all?
No, only because it was Joyce. she was the most assuring thing she ever saw. She'd shoot him out a couple of times.
What about just the possibility? I mean, you've
like I say, there, God promised me if I behaved that I would be taken care of. And I told him when I married Joyce, I said, we're not two, we're one. So anything you're going to do for me, you're going to do for her. That's the only way I'll bite. And I was, I don't know why, but I was perfectly at ease. The biggest scare, fear, or whatever you want to call it, I never was afraid of anything. I had fears and druthers, other things I'd rather do than others. But I got down to Natal, Brazil, twin-engine bomber, two gunners in the back. We had interphone, but you couldn't see each other, you know, and talk to each other. The bomb bay was filled with a fuel tank. And it's 5-6 hours to Ascension Island out in the South Atlantic. All that water, and I'm a Texas farm boy. You talk about your eyes open. My eyes were open that day. And fortunately for me, I got an airplane with the best ADF radio in it that, of all of them that were my buddies wouldn't even half perform what mine was doing. So I wasn't quite halfway across the Ascension when I'm already picking up the Homer over there on the island. So I knew I was staying on course. We had navigators take all the winds and everything, and they came up with a one-heading course, so we didn't worry about wind or whatever. Just the tailwind factor, which changed our ground speed, but I never was so glad to see a little pile of rock in my life as I was. And of course, I'd get that six-hour run to Ascension. I figured, well, nothing can happen now. I'm over land from here on. I take off from that car, and they had two emergency strips they'd briefed us on. And just as I was coming up on the called ATAR emergency strip, something got my eye on the instrument panel. I looked, and my oil pressure was starting to, on one engine, fluctuate. And then all of a sudden, pew, zero. So I feathered the engine, and I'd already made up my mind I was going to land on that strip because I had enough altitude. If I didn't have an engine, I could make it. And just as I got that one feathered, the other one did it. So instead of feathering the other one, I unfeathered turned final and landed it and got it off the runway. And we get out of it, and those engines were smoking something fierce because they were hot. Went out to pull a prop through, and it's frozen. So I had an emergency landing. I didn't know it was really an emergency until afterwards. Here, sitting there, they got a building about 8 foot square. And they did have fuel, so they came over in a Jeep and picked us up. I said, how do we get the hell out of here? And he said, there'll be a C-47 stop in the morning. They'll pick up you three guys and all your belongings and fly you on up to Saleh Airport in Morocco. So that was my closest thing to emergency. But I really didn't know I had it till after I got on the ground. I had painted the Joyce Ann on the nose of the airplane. We left her there. About 2 months later, a buddy of mine came in and landed, and he had the Joyce Ann. They had changed the engines, and he was coming through on a C-47. And he says, hey, that's Jim Parker's airplane. He says, you fly? Yeah. Would you fly this one up to Morocco for us? So he jumped in and brought it up to Saleh Airport in Morocco. And they came in and reassigned all of us right after that. That's when I got assigned to the B-17.
Yeah, and here I hate to keep coming back to one idea, but when I asked you if it concerned you at all to head overseas and leave a pregnant wife behind, you said no because it was Joyce. But here I'm also hearing you say that just before that, you'd seen a fellow pilot of yours killed in a training accident, you know, before he even went overseas.
Yeah.
And you know what's happening overseas, that there's anti-aircraft, that there's enemy fighters, yeah. There's any number of things that can happen to a pilot, especially this early on in the war. So there was no thought in your mind that you might not come back and see her and your unborn child?
I grew up with a wonder if I was a coward or not. And when I got in the military and I got in the A-20 and I started overseas, I said, well, I have a feeling this airplane is going to tell you whether you're a coward or not. And when I got to Ascension Island, I knew I wasn't a coward. That all disappeared then. But she was such a solid citizen that I knew that she would take care of herself. Of course, she went back to Shafter. She found her little one-bedroom apartment there in Shafter. Got her a doctor, and she had our son. He was 5 months old when I saw him the first time. And I get there, and I knock on the door, and Joyce makes it. And she was twice as beautiful as I remember. And then I hear the baby crying, so we go in there. And he was really upset that there was a man in their apartment with his mother. And he's 5 months old. They were really close, and they always were. He just died last year, 78 years old. But I never was as glad to see anybody in my life. That's when my emotions cut loose that you were asking about earlier. That was the ultimate security, Joyce and I together.
Jim and Joyce enjoyed 78 years of marriage together, but the reunion we just heard about would have never happened if Jim did not survive December 19th, 1943, a mission that would earn him the Distinguished Flying Cross and leave many wondering how in the world he brought his crippled B-17 in safely. We'll hear the story of that mission and more of his aerial exploits next time. Don't forget to check out the photos and a video with Jim online at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. You've heard what kind of storyteller he still is at age 99, so make sure you join us again next time for what it's fair to say are his most miraculous memories. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.